Welcome to Haunted Hospitality, Southern Stories Told by Spooky Gingers. I'm Robin.
And I'm Zoe, and I have a story to share today. But first, Robin, how's life?
You know, it's good. We had a slumber party.
Yes, we did.
It was fun.
Yes, it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun, yeah. We had a slumber party. We met our friend at the mall while she was shopping for clothes, and then we went to a local wine shop. And we got, like, the cheapest wine you can possibly get that's still good. And there was a very kind gentleman there.
Who did not judge us at all for our choice of wine.
No, but he actually...
Which was very, we just learned how to drink wine.
Yes. I mean, it was actually the first... Oh my god, that was the last time we had a slumber party, was the last time we drank that red wine.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because I remember I was 21 and a half and I decided I was ready to start drinking. So I wanted Robin to be there for my very first alcoholic beverage at 21 and a half. And and so
we watched Spider-Man.
And Miss Marvelous Simpsons Maisel.
Yes.
Yeah, and we drank that wine.
Yeah.
And also, I started drinking Bailey's out of a cup because I didn't realize you were supposed to mix it into things.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And now that's the way I drink it, and everybody looks at me like I'm crazy.
I mean, you're drinking, I think, several shots worth of liquor if you're drinking it
in a
cup. Okay, okay, okay.
I put it in a wine glass and I just drink it.
Zoe's real fun to have parties, guys.
But, yeah, so... We had a slumber party. Mm-hmm. Toes kept you up all night because he's a little devil.
You and Kari were really good. So whenever Toes would just go crazy and be like, no, no, stop. And like every now and then one or the two of you would pop up and just grab Toes and bring him back to y'all's room.
Yeah.
One time you terrified me.
Yeah, yeah.
You watched a scary movie.
We did.
And I was...
Yelling
it was like
at
3
him.
3 a.m. I was sorry. I didn't mean to.
No. You're supposed to yell at him.
Okay. I sat up on the futon. I had my head in my hands because it was so late. And then I just look up, and then you're right there.
Yes. And I picked him up, and then I brought him into our room, and I shut the door so that he couldn't go out and bother you anymore.
Thank you. At one point, he was attacking my hair.
Yeah. And so he ran around rambunctiously in our room for about 30 to 40 minutes before finally settling down.
Yeah.
I love him so much.
He's fun.
He is.
Yes.
And he's my sweet little boy because when I woke up, he was curled up on the bed and I was able to lay with him and he was purring and rubbing his face on my face and he's just so sweet and he's such a devil too.
He was stabbing the inside of my futon. Your futon that I was sleeping on last night. And I was like, is he gonna just puncture me?
Well, you were sleeping on a futon, two comforters, and a fitted sheet.
Yeah, but I was feeling him punch up through it.
It's like the princess and the pea.
Yeah, I'm just so sensitive. The cat that's clawing its way through the mattress.
It's so sensitive.
Me. Yeah. So Zoe, how's your life going?
Well, I had a slumber party last night. Nice. So that was fun.
Anyone I know?
Do you know yourself?
You know, that's a question I ask myself a lot. I think I know myself to a degree. A good degree. I feel like I am fairly self-aware. Not completely, but fairly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where I am.
As opposed to unfairly.
I feel like I know myself enough that, you know, you're not fully self-actualized. If we're talking about, like, the Maslow's hierarchy of needs or something, I don't know. But, like, I know myself enough that I'd be able to introduce myself to.
Well, I'm glad you know people. Your name.
That doesn't describe it very well. I can describe a lot of what's going on in my head. How about that?
Okay.
Which is a lot better than a lot of people can say.
A lot better than I can say.
Okay.
You can ask me a question and I'll just sit there and stare at you and smile.
What's your favorite color?
Purple. I know that one.
Yeah, you're wearing purple glasses right now.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of purple things in my house, too.
There are. There really are.
There really are. I like purple. And I've heard, like, that's, like, a thing with purple people. One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sorry.
Wait, are you, like, they really, like, when they like purple, they really like purple?
Yeah.
Like, I agree because I know two people who really like purple, and they really like purple.
Who are the two people?
You and Rachel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I love purple. I'm dyeing my hair purple. Ooh.
Oh, yeah, she is.
Yeah. So we went to USC, and USC's colors are garnet and black, and the rival of USC is
orange and purple.
And I really, really wanted to dye my hair purple, but I couldn't be walking around USC campus with purple hair, and when it grew out, my roots would look orange.
Yeah.
So instead I dyed my hair. It was supposed to be blue, but it came out like a sea green kind of color.
I don't remember that.
And then I dyed it pink, hot pink.
Remember the hot pink.
And then
the hot pink was a great look.
Thank you. And then I dyed it blue again, but now I'm gonna be purple.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited for you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's my life.
Okay, cool. Well, do we want to go into
our something?
Yeah.
So the reason we're is because Robin and I have determined that we're going to expand upon something Southern mm-hmm. a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to include something spooky.
Woo! Or yay. No, boo! But like a
boo.
Ghost. Like not like we're booing the idea, but we're like...
Yeah, I get it.
Okay, cool. Boo!
But yeah, so we're going to do something spooky, just like something Southern, where we talk about something that is Southern. We're talking about something that is spooky.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be Southern.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be Southern, so it can be Northern, European, Russian...
The whole world is yes. our oyster.
Yes, a slimy, gross oyster. And and with a little pearl of nugget. No, and a little nugget of pearls?
You can have a pearl in there, yeah.
But can you have a pearl of nuggets? No, you can have a nugget of pearls, I think.
So this isn't replacing something spooky, something Southern. This is just adding to it. This right. is. So some episodes we're going to do something Southern, some episodes we're going to do something spooky, and we are starting off this episode.
With something spooky. Spooky. And spooky, as defined on the Haunted Hospitality Glossary of Terms, includes...
Now I have to do a blog post about that.
You're welcome. It includes everything. True crime, mystery, all of that. Paranormal. It doesn't just have to be ghosts. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's called...
Something spooky.
Well, that's why we're... spooky gingers. We're not just oh. ghostly gingers. We're spooky. And that's why our spooky submissions can be ghosts or true crime or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So, today's something spooky. Robin and I are going to share a topic that we would both like to do more research on, and we would love to have an episode on it. However, because it's not Southern specific, or maybe it doesn't happen in the South at all, we wouldn't be able to do a full episode. But it's something we're interested in. So, Robin, would you like to go first?
I would, thank you. I want to talk about the Salem Witch Trials.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, okay, it feels basic to say, just because who hasn't talked about the Salem Witch Trials?
I know.
But, and, like, okay, I'm... in the camp of there is a logical explanation for it.
Right.
But I don't know what that logical explanation is, because I have seen scientific examples, mm-hmm. as in there's something in the water that is physically causing this reaction in all the young girls and I think women.
Right.
And then I've also seen socioeconomic and historical and religious reasons, like socio right. issues caused by different religious beliefs within the community, because there were diverging beliefs of what should happen, and so some groups were accusing other groups of witchcraft, and I think it was maybe just this like wacky convergence of right. all these issues, and I would love to just do a deep dive on that.
Okay.
But we can't, because that's not the format of this episode, of these episodes.
I actually real quick want to throw this in.
Mm-hmm.
So you know my family's from Massachusetts.
Yes, I do.
What you don't know is that my father's mother's maiden name is Proctor. I'm related to John Proctor.
You're related to John Proctor?
I'm related to John Proctor.
Is it okay if I eviscerate him? Because I have a lot of issues
oh,
with
please
John
do.
Proctor.
Please
okay,
do.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
So I'm... he's like my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather or
wait,
something
you're directly
like that.
Descended from him?
Yeah.
didn't know that.
Yeah.
My Crucible people know what's up.
yeah, I remember reading that in class and being like, wow, this is my grandpa, huh? But yeah.
Wow. I'm really going to eviscerate your grandpa. I'm sorry. I got issues. But, with him.
So my something spooky, something I would love to cover on this show. Mm-hmm. So have you heard stories of kids that will be like, oh, I remember when I was your daddy and this is what happened when you were, like, kids remembering their past lives.
Oh.
You know? Uh-huh. I would love to share stories of kids remembering, like, just, like, going in the science behind it and, like, if it's believable or not and, like, best practices and things like that.
Best practices for what to do if your kids start shooting off information from a past life?
Yes, exactly.
Wow. Okay, yeah.
So, actually, and that's why we drinked in an episode on it. Mm-hmm. But, like, so their episodes are formatted differently than ours. And so I feel like I want to go even deeper into it, you know?
Yes.
And I would love to cover that. But it's not necessarily Southern.
Darn it.
So darn.
That is also added to the glossary of phrases.
If only there was something to do about that, Robin, about all these not Southern stories that we would love to share. But... We just can't.
So now that we bring all this up, I'm having an idea off the top of my head right now.
Really, Robin? What's that idea? What would you like to share?
What if we started a Patreon?
That's a beautiful idea.
And made mini episodes.
Oh.
That could be anywhere in the world available to our Patreon supporters.
Wow. Well, Robin, these mini-sodes, can you tell me a little bit more on how a mini-sode would be different than our normal episodes off the top of your head?
Well, first, we don't talk about our life, and we don't talk about something Southern or something spooky beforehand, because nobody will care. I mean, I think y'all
care,
hopefully. But, like, there, you're just there for the content.
Yeah.
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 And we would be talking about anywhere in the world, like we're doing with our Something Spookies.
Yeah.
And we would be going in depth. So we say mini, but we recorded one last night and it was like 50 minutes, y'all.
Yes. So if our sarcasm wasn't clear, we had already pre-planned
this. So we thought about this.
Yeah. So the reason we had a slumber party was actually because last night we watched A Woman in Black.
It was the very strategic slumber party. The Woman in Black.
The Woman in Black. Yeah. And so we were like, okay, let's watch The Woman in Black, and then we'll record a podcast episode, mini-sode, right after where we just talk about this spooky movie.
Mm-hmm. Spooky cinema. Zoe came up with that.
On the spot.
On the spot.
For, like, legit this time.
Yeah, it was actually on the spot.
So we don't have a Patreon yet, so we can't sit here and, like, plug it real quick. But it is in the work, and we would... Works. It is in the works.
Just one single work.
Just a single work. We will blast it once we have it, but what we want to do before we blast it is have a vault of minisodes already built up, because we want, day one, anybody who signs up for even our lowest tier of Patreon support to be able to access multiple episodes.
We're going to be talking about, like, you know, researched spooky content that's not necessarily Southern. We are going to be doing...
spooky cinema, where we review and talk about the scary movies.
Scary movies. I think we should also include true to crime documentaries in that.
Yes.
And I'd be really open to doing books, because you and I both have literary backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
Spooky books.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
So what we're kind of planning on doing, no promises. So we may be touring... The Biltmore.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I really had no idea where she was going with that guy.
Yeah, Robin was giving me this face. I'm like, am I not supposed to be talking about this?
No, right I just now? Really couldn't figure out what you were saying.
Yeah. So we might be touring the Biltmore estate, mm-hmm. and we would like to do a mini-sode that kind of complements the original Biltmore episode, where we can talk about our own experiences while we're at the estate and see what happens.
Yeah, and we're gonna go on a haunted tour of it too, I believe.
Not of the Biltmore, just of Asheville.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, that's
fun too.
Yeah.
Biltmore they don't. Asheville.
So Biltmore Estate does not provide haunted tours because they like to keep the ghosts on the hush hush.
Okay, well, you know, we're blowing that up, so.
Yeah. But yeah, so if that's something you're interested in, please let us know. And if you have more minisodes that you'd like us to cover, yeah. like if there's like, oh, you should do this for a minisode. And of course we might do like a random minisode here and there where Robin and I have wine in our hands and then we take a honeymoon quiz or BuzzFeed quizzes together and things like that.
I actually really did think of us doing a honeymoon quiz. A newlyweds quiz.
That's what it's called.
I feel like you and I would actually be really good at that. We've known each other for so long.
Yes, but you have to remember that I'm an idiot. So, I'm okay. So we joked about how my favorite color is purple.
Yeah.
In my head, your favorite color is still orange because of your email back when we were in middle school. That was Orange Monkey Girl.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to finish the rest
of
it.
Thank you. I mean, you already gave out the embarrassing parts of it. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I don't have a favorite color necessarily. I really love blues, greens, oranges, but there's also a lot of other things I like. I love color, but I don't have a favorite color, and it's not because I'm apathetic. It's because I'm really enthused about color.
Okay. Well, but yes, so that's our something spooky.
Yeah, that was really just an advertisement. Hey, we should make an announcement of that on our blog. Oh, also listen to go to our blog. We're gonna start writing actual blog posts about our experience researching and our thoughts that kind of come up with this. Like, we're actually treating it as a blog. It's not just a hosting place for our show notes and our sources.
Yes,
but we're also putting our sources there still.
Yes,
research.
So if you want to, she just winked at the microphone. If you want to see our thought process while we were gathering the notes and putting everything together, and how the story may have impacted us, you can go there.
Yeah.
Especially for today's episode.
Yeah. So this is a biggie, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to get into details, but recently everybody knows what the Amber Alert system is. Mm-hmm. Recently, the Amber Alert system popped up into my life in an impactful way. I'm not going to get into details on the show, but basically something happened and I started doing a little bit of research into the Amber Alert system. Everything's fine. Yes, it turned out fine in the end. I had already actually planned on doing this prior to that happening. Mm-hmm. It was in our list of show ideas. But I felt like this was a good time now to go ahead and just record this episode about the Amber Alert. So, Robin, do you know the story behind the Amber Alert system?
I only know two bullet points of it.
Okay.
Do you want me to say those bullet points or no?
Go ahead.
Girl named Amber was abducted. Mm-hmm. It didn't turn out great. The mom started Amber Alerts.
Yeah, kind of. Okay, yeah.
That's the only thing I know.
Yeah, and the Amber Alert system has saved many lives, and I'll get to the statistics. But, yeah, so this is a more somber episode, unfortunately, because it does involve the kidnapping and death of a 9-year-old girl. But I feel like not enough people understand why we have the Amber Alert system, especially these days when I feel like Amber Alert system is more of a annoying thing that makes your phone blow up these days, rather than a life-saving tool, like what people see it as.
Okay. I mean, I don't think of it as an annoying thing. I always pay attention to it when it comes up.
But I just remember being in class, and, everybody's phone would go off. Mm. And everybody's like, oh my god, and teachers would be annoyed because it was interrupting classes and stuff like that. So, but yeah. So, I wanted to share the story so that we can understand the impact of it a little bit more. Also, it's kind of timely. The 25th anniversary just passed.
Okay.
So, January 19th, I believe. 13th. January 13th, 2021 was the 25th anniversary. So, let's get into it. Alright, so I broke this into different sections. You'll see why. But basically, this is Amber's story right now. Amber Hagerman was a 9-year-old little girl, and she had actually been on the news recently because her mother was on welfare, and her mother had been part of a documentary by the WFAA, and so that WFAA had footage from just a few months prior to her disappearance of Amber just being a normal little girl. Mm-hmm. And so when Amber went missing, Donna, Amber's mom, reached out to the WFAA and said, please come and make my story known, you know? So from the day Amber was missing, well, the day after Amber was missing, all the way through, I believe, 6 months after she went missing, the WFAA monitored the family and recorded the family and came up with this documentary called After Amber. Yeah, so a lot of my information comes from this documentary. It's on YouTube free, so you can watch it.
Okay.
But it's called After Amber, a WFAA documentary. So just to give you a little bit of a background to Amber before she disappeared, her mom was Donna Whitson. I believe her new last name is Williams because she's been remarried since. Amber's father was Richard Hagerman. So Amber is Amber Hagerman.
Okay.
Donna left Richard and the kids just a few months, I think a year actually, prior to her disappearance, because Donna said that they're abusive. It was an abusive relationship. Donna was 19 and Richard was 36 when Amber was born.
Okay.
So that kind of gives
that's messed up.
Yeah, it just kind of gives you an idea of maybe what that relationship would be like. Mm-hmm. But Donna, she dropped out of school in the 7th grade, and then when she left her husband, well, actually, they never got married. So when she left Amber's father, she moved into a woman's shelter with her two kids.
Did she bring Amber and
the other? Yeah, and Ricky. Ricky's the little brother.
I thought you were saying that she left them with the abusive husband.
No. Okay. So she, with her two kids, she went to the woman's shelter. And then she refused to receive child support from Richard. Donna is a very strong woman.
Mm-hmm.
So she lived on welfare. She was stressing the importance of education to her kids. And so Amber was on the AB honor roll. She had many awards and all of that. And she was called a worrywart by her mom because even at the young age of 9, she was almost like a second mother to her little brother, Ricky. She was worrying about money and all of that. I mean, she was still a kid, you know, she still played games and had fun and wanted things that she knew she probably couldn't afford or her mom couldn't afford. But, she was a good, smart kid with a big heart. So on Saturday, January 13th, 1996, Amber and Ricky and Donna showed up to Donna's parents' house to visit. Amber and Ricky had just gotten bikes for Christmas. So the second that they got to the grandparents' house, they both went up the neighborhood into an abandoned parking lot of Winn-Dixie because it had a fun ramp. So they were going to ride their bikes on that ramp a couple times, and then they were going to come home and spend the evening with their grandparents. But Ricky, who was 5 at the time, he went with Amber, and he ended up being done before her, so he came back on his own. And when he came back on his own, and then Amber didn't show up, Amber's grandfather, Jimmy, was like, what happened? So he took his truck and went to the Winn-Dixie. And when he was at the Winn-Dixie, he was calling Amber's name. A neighbor of theirs, Mr. Kevill, he saw Jimmy and he was on the phone with the police and he told Jimmy what he had seen.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Kevill had seen a man in a black truck grab Amber, drag her into the car while she was screaming and kicking and yelling, and then speed off. Mr. Kevill was on the phone with the police, like I said. Jimmy drove back home, told Donna, hey, this is what Mr. Kevill saw. And the reason I'm calling the neighbor Mr. Kevill is because his first name is also Jimmy. Yeah, sorry. Okay. I just didn't want to confuse you, and I previously wrote Neighbor Jimmy and Grandpa Jimmy.
But, yeah, that would have confused me.
Yeah. So, Jimmy means the grandpa, Mr. Kevill is the neighbor.
Okay.
So, it was a black pickup truck. I don't know if I said it, the color.
You did.
Okay, cool. So when Donna heard the news, she ran to the Winn-Dixie and she was screaming, yelling Amber's name. Obviously, the cops showed up. They looked around. They couldn't find anything initially. Within hours, they were putting up flyers. So it had a photo of her. And, oh, something I do want to say. She left her grandparents' house at 3:10 p.m.
Who?
Amber.
Amber, okay.
Amber left her grandparents' house at 3:10 p.m. She was grabbed at 3:18 p.m. She was out of her mom's eyesight for 8 minutes when she was grabbed.
And the boy had left within those...
Yeah, it was like, right up the block. It was, like...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, it was really close.
They have it down to the minute. That's really... It's really helpful that that neighbor saw everything.
Right. Because, and the only reason, like, the neighbor saw it and he wasn't able to do anything was because the neighbor was in his backyard and there was a big fence between him and the Winn-Dixie.
Yeah.
So he wasn't able to, like, jump the fence. And the neighbor was older, too. Mm. So he wasn't, like, he couldn't jump the fence and chase after the truck or anything. And he couldn't go defend her. So... Yeah. He made the difficult decision of staying in the backyard to watch the whole thing instead of taking off around the house. And when he would have showed up, the truck was probably going to be long gone.
Yeah.
So that's a difficult decision, but he was a witness, and so he had to be a witness, you know? Mm-hmm. There's no way he was the only witness, but a lot of misinformation spread because of the inaccuracies of the police system at the time. And so I believe it was being reported that it was a blue pickup truck instead of a black pickup truck. And okay. So everybody was telling the neighbors initially to look for a blue pickup truck. And so they weren't looking at the black pickup trucks. So.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
That's a thing that comes up a lot. Not necessarily that they get the vehicles wrong, but that they get the immediate information of who or what you should be looking for wrong, and it so the person can get away.
Like the Zodiac Killer.
Yeah, the Zodiac Killer.
They were, like, somehow, the operator told them to look for a black man, somehow.
I thought it was that they said white man, and then they pursued a black man, even when a white man who passed the description passed them.
When I looked into it a little bit more...
Anyway, you could totally be right. Yeah.
She left at 3:10 and she was taken at 3:18. So she was gone for 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So they had her description out immediately. And then media showed up by the truckload because this is a kind of quiet town. The neighborhood was mostly older people. Mm-hmm. And so, like, this was a child that was taken in broad daylight and nobody could do anything about it. So the media showed up, filling the street, reporting on the story. It took off like wildfire. Donna entertained every media channel. She stood in front of her yard and she said, "This is my baby. This is what my baby looks like. Please find my baby." And she was telling them over and over again, hoping that somebody could see the information and find her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Neighbors were putting up posters. Strangers came from everywhere to help with the search. This happened in Arlington, Texas. So she became Arlington's angel.
Okay.
And so everybody was like, help find the Arlington angel because she was a good kid. She was well known for being a good kid. They had helicopters searching the area. However, the police believed Amber to be long gone. They believed that the truck was long gone, that they weren't going to find her.
And how many hours had it been when they decided that the truck was long gone?
I believe it was the next day. Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, 25 years ago was a very different world, in part because of the Amber Alert, so...
Right. Yeah. Okay. And they didn't have the technology back then to, like, on news channels, you know? Like, obviously the news channels were reporting on this, but it was just, like...
You probably can't with satellites track...
Yeah.
...people and things the way you can now.
Yeah. Did I mention what year?
You said this was 25 years ago, so...
Yeah, 1996.
Okay.
But 5 days after her disappearance, a man was walking his dog at the edge of his apartment complex. At the apartment complex, there was a path that people would often walk their dogs, and then there was a fence, and then there was an unnamed creek. And there had just been rainstorms that day. And prior to the rainstorms, there was a maintenance crew out there, and they didn't see anything in the creek. But after the storm, when he was walking his dog, the neighbor was walking his dog, he looked into the creek and he saw something white.
Oh, no. Okay.
And it was a body. Yeah. And he said that he just knew it was her. Because, like, everybody in that town knew Amber at that point. Because it was 5 days later. So, this was at... He immediately called the police at 1 a.m. Because, okay, so Donna, this whole time, she's been staying at her parents' house. She hasn't gone back to her apartment once. Mm-hmm. Because this was where Amber was last seen, you know?
Oh, yeah, that makes... Plus, you would kind of need support, maybe, yeah. in that time. Yeah.
Yeah. At 1 in the morning, they started putting crime scene tape up at Amber's grandparents' house, at Donna's parents' house, mm-hmm. at 1 in the morning. And that's when they heard that a body had been found, but the police refused to positively identify the body.
To the family?
To the family at that moment. Despite the way that the body appeared, they wanted to confirm it was who the identity of the body was before they told anybody.
But you do that by getting the family to confirm it.
They did not want, due to the state of the body, they did not want Donna looking at her. Yeah. Okay. So, at 5 a.m., no, excuse me, 5:30 a.m., 4.5 hours later, they finally confirmed it was Amber's body. Her body was found naked. It had been bloated from the water, and the official cause of death was slit throat.
Okay. So we can kind of...
Yeah.
We can suss out what happened. Yeah.
And the police believed, based off of an autopsy, Amber had been alive for 48 hours after she had been kidnapped.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So she had only been dead for 3 days at that point.
I'm just thinking that that must have been, like, a really awful 4.5 hours for that family as they were putting up the police tape. And you kind of knowing, but you can't officially know, and your brain is just going crazy.
And the documentary people were there the whole time it was happening. Wow. And you can just see Donna, and she's just sitting on the couch, and she's just staring. She's not looking at the TV. She's just staring.
In that space in between?
Yeah, like, she's just sitting on the couch. She's like, somebody's holding her hand. Richard, Amber's father, does show up at the, like, he showed up when Amber went missing, and they were holding hands at one point, and, like, he was, like, rubbing her back and stuff. So he was there, and he was, like, a part of the search party for Amber and all of that. So he did step up there. It wasn't like he was a deadbeat, necessarily. We don't have the full story there. Mm-hmm. But, like I said, they didn't want to have any family see the body. And they believe that she was dumped higher up the creek, and the rainwater had pushed her down.
So she couldn't have been far.
Very far at all. So the police were incorrect when they said...
Crap!
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Also, while everybody was sitting around waiting to hear if it was officially Amber's body or not, her 5-year-old little brother just couldn't understand what was going on. He understood something was off, and he knew his sister wasn't there. Mm. But he was, like, watching cartoons. He was trying to be a normal 5-year-old little boy.
Yeah.
And, in the months after her death, whenever he would be picked up from school, he would always ask his mom, Mama, is Amber at home? Am I going to be able to play with Amber? And then he started acting out and becoming more violent and not listening to Donna and things like that. So, like, how a 5-year-old would process grief. So that's the story of Amber's disappearance. Here's the investigation. So the police released a profile of who they think the man could be, which was beautifully 3 bullet points long. That's a great, great profile.
And so this is after the body has been found?
So, yes, yes, okay. Yes, yes. They believed he was white or Hispanic.
Okay.
Because there was a large Hispanic population in the area. It's Arlington, Texas.
Okay.
25 years or older. And they said that the timing of the crime was related to stress in his life.
Okay. I mean, it had to have been a spur-of-the-moment decision, because they're not always in that area. He couldn't have predicted that she would have been at the Winn-Dixie.
Right, and she had just gotten the bike for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And it was January 13th.
Yeah.
And they believed that he had done it before. He had done something like this before. So they did not believe it was his first time kidnapping somebody.
I can see why they would say that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the first 2.5 months, the police department had received over 3,000 leads. However, none of them were viable.
How can you tell if it's not viable? It's hard. How would you...
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But they had so many leads. They had a lot of evidence. They had an eyewitness. And they weren't able to find a single suspect in the entire time that they were investigating.
Mm-hmm.
And after 3 months of no suspect at all, Donna wrote an open letter to the killer and read it out loud on the news, demanding to know what happened and hoping that the killer would write her back. She published her address and all of that. And she was like...
Like her address, not a P.O. box?
No, her address. She's like, come at me, basically. She was hoping to either guilt him into turning himself in or angering him to write back and they would learn something about him.
Gotcha.
There was a task force for her case. There was a $75,000 award for information leading to Amber's murderers. Any tips to finding her murderer. And they received about 15 tips a week and had a dedicated police force. Mark Simpson was the task force leader, and he was unable to find anyone at all, not even a single suspect, despite working closely with the family. After no suspects were even found, the community members would walk along the Reek Creek that her body was found with rakes. And they would literally skim the bottom of the creek looking for evidence because the police weren't.
Mm.
And they were trying to find anything, but they couldn't find anything at all. And then they did have a small sample of DNA at the crime scene that they wished to test to see if it could lead back to anybody. But as of the article that I wrote that was written in 2020, they had not yet. I read.
I figured that's what you meant.
Yeah. They had not tested it yet. Why?
It's not like there's not money that people would... This is well known. I feel like you have the money to, if you need a little bit of money to test it, you know?
Exactly. Especially since it just had that resurgence, because it's been the 25 years and all of that.
Can you still test DNA after 25 years? I have no idea.
I think so. I don't know.
I guess the DNA wouldn't die. It's
DNA. If they preserve it correctly.
I really have no idea how this works.
So, they do have some physical evidence that they refuse to broadcast or share with anyone because it's, like, specific information that only the killer would know, and so they don't want to advertise it. We've come across this in the past where people will falsely say that they've done a crime. I don't know why. They'll confess to it, even though they're nowhere near that crime. And so, they don't want to broadcast this specific piece of evidence because they don't want somebody coming forward and saying, I did it, this is exactly how I did it. Like, they want to know for sure that it's the right person.
Yeah.
On January 12th, 2021, on the 25th anniversary, well, the day before the 25th anniversary of Amber's death, there was a press conference in Arlington where Donna was there. And I just have to say, I had just watched the documentary. And I was watching Donna talk, and she was brunette. She was probably, if she was 19 when Amber was born, she was, like, 28, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She was youthful, and she was sad, but she was youthful. And then I watched this press conference, and Donna was there, and she had long gray hair, and she was old. And to me, it had only been 5 minutes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But to her, it's been 25 years. And seeing that change in her really made me be like, oh, crap. This woman has not known what happened to her baby for the last 25 years. That's longer than I've been alive.
Yeah.
But Donna spoke at the press conference, and she pleaded for Amber's killer to turn himself in, even though there's a good chance at this point he's already dead, you know, depending on his age when he kidnapped Amber.
Yeah.
And when it comes to people who are okay with kidnapping little girls, they're probably okay with other things like drug use and alcoholism. So not saying that all drug users are kidnappers. I'm saying kidnappers are probably drug users. Okay. Because drug use is a mental disease, not a mental disease. Anyway, I'm cutting that out. Okay. Yeah. But so Donna spoke and she said, please give Amber justice. Amber needs justice deeply. So the investigation has turned up no one at all. It's still an open case. So Donna's activism. Mm. So during the crisis, Donna received countless gifts from her community. But after the funeral, because they were sending girl toys, you know, like stereotypical girl toys, like bunnies and stuffed animals and princess sets and things like that.
They were sending
that
to Donna?
Yes, before they found her body. Because the idea was like, oh, when she comes back, she'll have all these toys to play with, essentially. Yeah. After the funeral, Donna donated every single toy to the woman's shelter that she resided in. So, okay. She worked with her previous husband, or they never got married. I don't know why I typed in husband, but with Richard, to force action to protect this from happening to more children. Donna became an advocate for missing children and to protect children everywhere. People in her town grew angry and more afraid for their own children. And there was a town meeting, basically, where moms and dads and kids themselves were lining up at a microphone, basically yelling at the town officials, being like, this is not okay that you haven't found anyone. I'm terrified. My kids are terrified, you know? Mm. There was just this anger in the town that Amber was gone and she couldn't be found again. And the police knew that, or felt like this was somebody who had done something like this before. The town gathered to form a group called People Against Sex Offenders, PASO for short. And Donna and Richard were the head of the group. And so PASO began a grassroots movement to harshen charges for sexual harassers. Mm. Or, I'm sorry, sexual offenders. It was really big at first with fundraisers and bake sales and all of that. But it ended up dwindling to Donna, Richard, and a few, a handful others. Other parents who had previously lost their children. And they just operated out of a office in the church. Mm-hmm. Donna was able to, through her activism of PASO, in June 1996, she went to speak in front of a congressional committee in Washington, D.C., along with a few other parents who have lost their children to kidnapping. And they basically told the story of their children going missing, and they were trying to build a nationwide system to track sex offenders. Basically, all this anger was being turned towards sex offenders because they believed that since the man had done this before, they believed he had been arrested for a crime. I don't know if that's a logical leap, but they believed he was on the sex offender registry. Well, they believed he was a sex offender.
I can see thinking that he did another crime if, like, you... Because I feel like with the first crime, maybe there would be build up to it. Mm-hmm. And there couldn't have been build up to this.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean he was caught in any sort of way.
Right, yeah. But they were I guess their thought, because we have the sex offender registry. Mm-hmm. They were the people who built the sex offender registry. It didn't exist.
Oh, PASO built it?
Yes. Okay. Well, they didn't build it, but basically they spoke in front of a congressional committee, and then that committee took it to the Senate and the House and stuff, introduced a bill for it. And then later, Donna and Richard were flown to D.C. again, and they were in the Rose Garden when Bill Clinton, President Bill Clinton, signed it into a law.
Okay.
So they were successful. So now that we have the sex offender registry. So that was thanks to Amber, you know? As she fought through for the future of children, she was also facing issues at home. So in addition to all the toys, thousands of dollars were donated to Donna. Mm-hmm. However, Donna was still in the welfare program. And so the government was like, well, you have this money now. You don't need to be on the welfare. And she's like, I put that into a trust fund for Ricky.
Her son. Okay.
So that he could go to college one day. Because from the very beginning, she has stressed education. And she's like, I'm not touching this money. This is all for Ricky. I refuse to profit off of my daughter's disappearance.
Yeah.
However, the government, because she did that and she still refused to ask for child support from Richard, even though they have had a reconciliation, they took her off the welfare program. And she didn't have a job yet. She was spending all of her time going from schools to school to school to be a public speaker, telling kids to stay safe. Mm. She didn't have a job. I mean, eventually she did get a job. However, she did have classes to become a healthcare assistant, and basically she did eventually get it, but they didn't make it any easier for her, which is just, like, such a terrible thing, you know?
Yeah.
When Amber initially went missing, another parent, a mom, she was like, there has to be something we can do. So she called a local Dallas-Fort Worth radio station and said, can you please, like, broadcast this information so that people can keep an ear out? And they're like, that's a really good idea. We're going to do this. So they broadcast that information. After Amber was found and all of that, they reached out to Donna and they were like, hey, we're starting something. We want to start the Amber Alert system in your daughter's honor. And Donna agreed, and they basically kind of toured it publicly, like being like, hey, this is something we're starting. Basically getting all broadcast networks to broadcast, you know, hey, this is what's happening. This is what the child missing looks like and all of that.
So like a weather alert, but for missing children.
Basically, yes. I'm going to give more details about like what an Amber Alert system is. I do want to say that the Amber Alert system was only active for 2 years before it saved its first life. An 8-week-old infant was kidnapped by his babysitter, and he was rescued only 90 minutes after the alert went out. And in 2016, he started college.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was after years of the Amber Alert growing, Donna said, it's saved children's lives. It's helped bring children back to mommy and daddy. It's another legacy for my daughter that she did not die in vain. She is still taking care of our little children like she did when she was here.
Aww.
Yeah. It's like, when I was doing these notes, I had to, like, fight for sobbing. And I know I've been kind of ranting and you haven't been able to put much input here.
No, I'm just absorbing it.
Yeah. So this is less of a fun episode and more of a educational.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let me say something while I chug my Coke real quick.
I'm sad. I don't know. I'm getting chills a lot in this episode and sometimes trying not to cry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed, but a couple times I've gotten
chills. I noticed, yeah.
So statistics are a lot less sad.
Okay, good.
I mean, they're sad, but, like, they're numbers, so you can ignore the sadness.
Okay.
Okay, so the Amber Alert system started in 1996 due to the death of Amber. I just covered that.
Yep.
So Amber, while it also is the name of the little girl, it stands for America's Missing Broadcast Emergency Response.
Okay.
And when you write Amber Alert, the Amber is in all caps.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, originally it began in Dallas-Fort Worth, but it became a national alert system. So the PROTECT Act, so basically it started in Dallas-Fort Worth, and they kind of like spread the news until it became a national thing. Eventually, federally, the PROTECT Act passed in 2003, and it established a role in the Department of Justice called the Amber Alert Coordinator. And in 2003, the Amber Alert Coordinator issued a minimum standard for Amber Alerts. States can choose to abide by them. Most states do.
I don't get what you mean. I'm sorry.
Like a minimum standard. So, like, the case has to fit these specific things for you to be able to have an alert go out. So it's a very specific kind of alert. So it's not every time a kid goes missing, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if it was every time a kid goes missing...
It'd be a lot.
Yeah. So yes, the rules. So law enforcement must confirm that an abduction has taken place. They have to confirm that it has been an abduction. It can't just be somebody who disappeared. It can't be a runaway. It can't be anything of that. It has to be proven that it's an abduction.
Mm-hmm.
The child has to be at serious risk of injury or death. So in cases where it's two semi-sane parents and one takes the kid from the other parent, the kid isn't ruled in danger because if they're semi-sane, they don't believe that the parent will kill the child. If it's an insane parent that they believe, that's a different story.
I've definitely seen Amber Alerts where it mentions that it was a parent, so yeah. It must have been a dangerous parent. Yes. Or what was deemed a dangerous parent.
And usually it has to be some sort of, like, drug or psychological issue for it to be deemed a dangerous parent. There is a sufficient description of the child, the captor, and or the captor's vehicle to issue an alert.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't know what the kid looks like, don't know what the vehicle that looks like, don't know what the captor looks like, they can't issue the alert because then they'd be like, keep an eye out for anything, I guess?
Yeah.
And the child has to be 17 years or younger. So once the criteria are met, law enforcement notifies broadcasters and state transportation officials. The Amber Alerts interrupt normal broadcasts on TVs, radios, highway signs, and it can even be printed on lottery tickets. It can be posted on the internet, and it sends an alert to your phone. The phone thing is a new thing.
How new? Because I feel like it's been happening for years.
Well, as new as cell phones with internet data.
Oh, okay.
According to... I skipped a bullet. Sorry. The Amber Alert's main goal, in addition to letting the public know to be on the lookout, is to deter people who would prey upon kids. So if they know, oh, an Amber Alert's going to be issued, so I probably shouldn't.
Prevention.
Mm-hmm. And also, there have been several abductors who have released the child after seeing the Amber Alert. So they'll be driving on the highway, see on the highway sign.
Pull over.
Look for a Chevy, white Chevy with license plate 123456. And they're like, crap, I'm driving my white Chevy with a license plate 123456. I better pull off this highway right now before other people see me. And I'm just going to dump the kid and run, essentially.
Gotcha.
Because they think, like, I guess the police won't come after them once they have the kid. Once the kid's safe. Which I do believe that the police probably will pursue the kidnapper with less intensity.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, according to amberalert.ojp.gov, as of December 2020, 1,029 children have been rescued specifically because of the Amber Alert. That doesn't sound like a lot, however...
It sounds like a lot.
I'm getting into more statistics, So... It's probably more, but these are ones where it's 100%, I saw the Amber Alert, I saw the car, I was able to call the cops, you know? It has to be tied 100% to the Amber Alert for them to be able to claim it.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, but there's probably thousands more cases where it's like, it happened because of the Amber Alert, you know?
Yeah. Especially if the people... would drop off the kid and then...
Exactly. Yeah. So, like I said, 1,029 kids. So, 1,029. Let's put that into perspective. Sad perspective, but perspective. According to missingkids.org, there were 29,800 cases of missing children in 2020.
Really?
However, it can include multiple reports of one child. So if one child runs away every single month in a year, that's 12 different reports related to one kid that comes home.
Mm-hmm.
A new file is filed every time they go missing. However, 91% of those cases were endangered runaways, aka a child under 18 who's missing of their own accord and whose whereabouts are unknown to their parent or legal guardian.
91% of those, really?
91% of those would be what we would call runaways, essentially. Okay. That's approximately 27,000. So 3% were critically missing young adults. They didn't have a definition of what critically missing means. But young adults are 18 to 20.
Okay.
I'm guessing critically missing means, like, it's believed something wrong has gone, you know, something is wrong, rather than...
classify them as a runaway.
Yeah, because they're 18 and 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5% are family abductions. So those are kind of treated differently.
It's like a custody thing. Yeah. Often.
Yeah. And then less than 1% are non-family abductions. So that's 298. So 298 in 2020 were non-family abductions that an Amber Alert might have been issued for. Mm-hmm. So that is a smaller number right there. And then 1% are lost, injured, or otherwise missing. I don't know what that means. It's kind of just an other category.
Gotcha.
My last little bullet point for this entire story. While there are 421,394 open missing children cases, according to the FBI.gov.
Whoa.
But that dates back all the way to when they started tracking this.
When did they start tracking it?
I did not pull that year.
Okay, sorry.
No, you're fine. I probably should have grabbed that, but I have my sources. And so, over 420,000 open missing children's cases. 98.8% of children who go missing do come home.
Really?
Yes.
That's higher than I thought it would be.
Yes. So okay. I did want to add on that kind of uplifting note that 98.8% of children who go missing come home.
Good. Yeah. Good.
While there, I know there's that like statistic that goes out occasionally that's like, if a child's not found in the first 48 hours, they're probably dead. That statistic wasn't pulled from an actual study.
That was just people saying things.
It was like a study with low sample size, not conducted properly by a scientist. Mm-hmm. It was like some Joe Schmo sitting in front of their computer looking at missing children cases.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that study, that percentage, like I think it's like 74% of kids missing, not found within the first 48 hour. That's a percentage I kept finding everywhere.
It's basically don't stop looking after those 48 hours.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so just because your missing kid doesn't show up within the first 48 hours, that does not mean you're never going to see them again.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my emotional turmoil of a story.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yes.
That, I mean, it is intense, but I'm glad to know about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think moving forward, I'll have a little bit of a deeper appreciation for an Amber Alert.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well. Okay. If you liked that episode.
Oh, my God. How do we...
Yeah.
If you appreciated today's episode...
Yeah, that's a better way of phrasing it.
Yeah, if you appreciated today's episode, please like, subscribe, and review. All of this sounds weird.
It sounds a little dirty right now.
So we're not going to do that for this episode, yeah, actually.
You guys
so
know.
You know. You
yeah,
know.
And we, you know what we're talking
we're
about.
We're not here to exploit. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's been lovely talking to you guys.
Yeah. Stay lovely, my friends.
Yeah. Don't even stay...
Don't spooky.
Just, we're stay lovely. Oh, but the sources are available on our website.
Yes. Those sources are very important because it's a lot of statistics. Yes. So hauntedhospitality.wordpress.com.
Yes.
And maybe hug your siblings a little bit tighter today.
Or your children if you have children.
Yeah, I forgot people have children.
Forgot people with children. And okay. Stay safe out there.
Stay safe. There we go.
Yeah.
Stay safe.